Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu selected his residence beside the confluence of the Ganges and Jamuna at a place called Triveni. The two brothers, Ripagon and Sri Vallabha, selected their residence near Lourdes. At that time, Sri Vallabha Bhatta was staying at Adilagra, where he heard that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had arrived. He went to his place to see him. 4. Vallabha Bhatta was a great learned scholar of Vaishnavism. In the beginning, he was very much devoted to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but since he thought that he could not be proper respect from him, he later joined Vishnu Swami sect and became a charger of that sect. His sect is celebrated as the Vallabhacharya Sampradaya. This Sampradaya has had great influence in Vrindavan near Gokula and in Bandh. Vallabha Bhatta wrote many books, including a comedy on Srimad Bhagavatam called Subodhini Tika, and notes on the Vedantasa in the form of Anubhasha. He also wrote a combination of 16 short works called Shodashanta. Adilagram, where he was staying, was at the confluence of the river Ganges and Jamuna on the other side of the Jamuna, about 1 mile from the river. The village there is called Adiligram, or Adilagram. The temple of Lord Vishnu still belongs to the Vallabha Sampradaya. Vallabha Bhatta was originally from a place in southern India called Trilanga. There's a railway station there called Balu. 16 miles from that station is a village called Kanda Babada, or Kaku Rapadu. A learned brahmana named Lakshmana Dikshita used to live there, and Vallabha Bhatta was his son. There are 5 sections of the brahmana community of Uttar Pradesh, known as Bela Nati, Vegi Nati, Muraki Nati, Telugu Nati, and Kashava Nati. Out of these 5 Brahminical communities, Vallabha Charja took his birth in the community of Bela Nati in the year 1400, Shikanda era. According to some people, Vallabha Bhattacharya's father took sannyas before Vallabha, and he returned home to take Vallabhacharya as his son. According to the opinion of others, Vallabhacharya was born in the 1400 Shikanda era on the Ekadashi day of the Dharvan in the month of Chaitra, and he took his birth in a Brahmana family named Kambampati Bhava. According to this account, his father's name was Lakshmana Bhatta Dikshita. He was born in the Champakaranya. In someone else's opinion, Vallabhacharya appeared near the village named Champara Gram, which is near a railway station named Rajima in Madhya Pradesh. After studying for 11 years at Vasi, Vallabhacharya returned home. On his return, he heard that father had departed from the material world. Keeping his brother and mother at home, he went to the banks of the river Tungabhadra in a village called Vidyanagara, and it was there that he enlightened Krishnadev, the grandson of King Bukharva Maharaja. After that, he traveled throughout India thrice on trips lasting 6 years. Thus, he passed 18 years and became victorious in discussions with scripture. When he was 30 years old, he married Mahalakshmi, who belonged to the same Brahmana community. Near Govardhan Hill, he established a deity in the valley. Finally, he came to Adha, which is on the other side of Prayag. Balabhacharya had two sons, Gopinath and Aishwara, and in his old age he accepted the renounced order. In 1452, Shakabda era, he passed away from the material world at Varanasi. His book, known as Sodasha Grantha, and his commentary on Vedanta Sutra, or Anadasya, and the Bhagavatam, Sobodhini, are very famous. He has written many other books besides. Balabha Bhattacharya offered Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's obeisances, and the Lord embraced him after they discussed topics about Krishna for some time. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt great ecstatic love, began discussing Krishna, but the Lord checked his feelings because he felt shy before Balabha Bhatta. Although the Lord restrained himself externally, ecstatic love raged in him. There was no checking that. Balabha Bhatta was astonished to detest. Thereafter, Balabha Bhatta invited Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for lunch, and the Lord introduced the brother Rupa and Balabha to him. From a distance, the brothers, Rupa Goswami, and Sri Balabha fell on the ground and offered obeisances to Balabha Bhatta with great humility. When Bhattacharya walked toward them and away to a more distant place, Rupa Goswami said, "I am untouchable and no sinfulness do not touch me." Balabha Bhattacharya was surprised at this. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, however, was very pleased. He therefore spoke to him this description of Rupa Goswami. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Don't touch him, for he belongs to a caste. You are a follower of Vedic principles and are a well-experienced form of many sacrifices. You also belong to the aristocracy." Report: generally, Brahmanas are puffed up, false prestige, because they belong to the aristocracy and perform many Vedic sacrifices. In South India especially, this fastidious position is most prominent. At any rate, this was the caste. This was the case 500 years ago. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually started a revolution against this brahminical system by inaugurating chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. By this chanting, one can be delivered regardless of caste, creed, color, or social position. Whoever chants Hare Krishna Maha mantra is immediately purified due to the transcendental position of devotional service. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is here hinting to Balabha Bhattacharya that an exalted brahmana who sacrifices and follows Vedic principles should not neglect the person who is engaged in devotional service by chanting the Holy of the Lord. Actually, Rupa Goswami did not go to a lower caste. He was from a highly aristocratic brahmana family. But due to his association with a Mithun Nawab, he was considered fallen and excommunicated from the brahmana society. However, his advanced devotional service, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him as a Goswami. Balabha Bhattacharya knew all this. One who is a devotee is above caste and creed, yet Balabha Bhattacharya felt himself prestigious. The present head of the Balabha Bhattacharya Samaya of Bombay is named Dikshitaraj. He is very friendly to our movement, and whenever we meet him, this learned brahmana scholar highly praises the activities of the Hare Krishna movement. He is a life member of our society. And although he is an elite scholar in the brahminical caste tradition, he accepts our society and considers its members bona fide devotees of Lord Vishnu. Questions? Comments? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tata Manor Bho Bhagavan. Kai Ishtva Bipede Duravapam Anyata Bhomam Sukham Divyam Atapavargya Tata Manurva Ravan Pitamaho Yam Eka Matriya Purudakshayamakai Ishtva Vipede Duravapam Ando Aumam Sukham Devya Atapavargam Tata Manurva Bhagavan Vitamaho Yam Eka Matriya Puru Dakshinayamakai Ishtva Vipera Vapam Anyato Homam Sukham Divyam Tapavagyam Tata Manurva Bhagavan Vitamaho Yam Eka Matriya Purudakshinayamakai Ishtva Vipere Duravapam Anyato Omam Sukham Divyam Atapavargyam
Thank you.
Tatta, similarly, Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, Va, your, Bhagavan, worshipable, Pitamaha, grandfather, Yam, unto whom, Ekamatriya, with unching devotion, so great, Dakshinai, charity, Makai, by executing sacrifices, Ishtva, worshipping, Amitede, achieved, Dvapam, difficult to achieve, Anyata, by any means, Bhavam, material, Sukam, happiness, Devyam, celestial, Ata, thereafter, Apavargyam, liberation. Translation, Samitian for son, your grandfather Swayambhuva Manu executed great sacrifice with distribution of charity, and thereby with unflinching faith and devotion he worshipped and sacrificed and satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By acting in that way, he achieved the greatest success in material happiness and afterwards achieved liberation, which is impossible to him by worshipping the demigods. I'm going to go back because there's several verses that have no purpose. I'm going to read this verse in purport again, starting with text 14. The sage Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidura, a snake, when struck by a stick, breathes very heavily. Maharaj, having been struck by the strong words of his stepmother, began to breathe very heavily because of great anger. When he saw the father was silent and did not protest, he immediately left the palace and went to his mother. When Dhruva Maharaj reached his lips were trembling in anger, and he was crying very piteously. Queen Suniti immediately lifted her son onto her lap, while the palace residents, who had heard all the words of Suruchi, related everything to him. Thus, Suniti also became greatly aggrieved. This incident was unbearable to Suniti's patience. She began to burn in a forest fire, and in her grief she became like a burnt leaf and so lamented. She remembered the words of her co-wife. Her bright eyes filled with tears, and thus she spoke. Report, when a man is aggrieved, he feels exactly like a burnt leaf in a forest fire. Suniti's position was like that. Although her face was as beautiful as a flower, it dried up because of the burning fire caused by the harsh word co-wife. Translation, she also was breathing very heavily, and she did not know the factual remedy for the painful situation. Not finding any remedy, she said to her son, "My son, don't wish for anything inauspicious for others. Anyone who inflicts pains upon others suffers himself from the pain." Suniti said, "My dear boy, whatever has been spoken by Suruchi is so, because the king, your father, does not consider me his wife or even his maidservant. He feels ashamed to accept me. Therefore, it is a fact that you have been birthed from the womb of an unfortunate woman, and being fed from her breast, you have grown up. My dear boy, whatever has been spoken by Suruchi, your stepmother also, although very harsh to hear, is factual. For if you desire at all to sit on the same throne as your stepbrother, Upa, then give up your envious attitude and immediately try to execute instructions of your stepmother. Without further delay, you must engage yourself in worshipping the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of God." Report, the harsh words used by Suruchi to her stepson were true. Because a man is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot achieve any success in life. Man proposes, God disposes. Suniti, the Dhruva Maharaj, agreed with her co-wife's advice that to engage himself in the worship of the Supreme Personality, Godhead, through the words of Suruchi, were a benediction for Dhruva Maharaj, for because of the influence of his stepmother's words, he became a devotee. Sunita continued, Tration, the Supreme Personality, Godhead, is so great that through thy worshipping his lotus feet, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, acquired the necessary qualification to create this universe. Although he is unborn and he is the chief of living creatures, he is situated in that post because of the mercy of Supreme Personality, Godhead, whom even great yogis worship, controlling the mind and regulating the life air. Before Suniti cited the example of Lord Brahma, who was Dhruva Maharaja's great-grandfather. Lord Brahma is also a living being. By his penance and loyalty, he acquired the exalted position of creator of this universe by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. To become successful in any attempt, one not only has to undergo severe penances and loyalties, but one must also be depending on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This indication has been given to Dhruva Maharaja's stepmother and was now confirmed by his own mother, Suniti. And today's verse? Suniti warned her son, your grandfather, Swayambhuva Manu, executed great sacrifices with distribution of charity, and thereby, with unflinching faith and devotion, he worshipped and satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By acting in that way, he achieved the greatest success in material happiness, and afterwards achieved liberation, which is impossible to obtain by worship. The demigods purport. The success of one's life is measured by one's material happiness in this life and liberation in the next. Such success can be achieved only by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The words Eka Matya, concentrating one's mind on the Lord without deviation. This process of undeviating worship of the Supreme Lord is also expressed in Bhagavad Gita as Ananyabhak. That which is impossible to obtain any other source is also mentioned here. That's in quotations. That which is impossible to obtain from any other source is also mentioned here. Other source refers to worship of the demigods. It is especially stressed here that the opulence of Manu was due to his undeviating fitness in the transcendental service of the Lord. One who devotes his mind to worshipping many demigods to obtain material happiness is considered but of intelligence. If anyone wants even material happiness, he can worship the Supreme Lord without deviation, and persons who are those of liberation can also worship the Supreme Lord and achieve the life. It's a difficult position for Suniti. And she's certainly done it in very elevated qualities. Her position as the wife of the king indicates that she also has similar, though in a woman's body, similar chivalrous, spirited, attitude, and she's responding accordingly to the harsh words of her co-wife, Suruchi, very angry. At the same time, an anger that is controlled, and an anger that is controlled by her higher quality and her scriptural understanding. She could very easily have conspired with her son or with others to get some retribution, some retaliation for the harshness of her co-wife. If it was true, when we hear something said about ourselves, that may not be true, but if it's harshness of her co-wife. Even if it was true, when we suffer by ourselves, that may some criticism or language in just some position where there is lack of qualification. We don't like that. Who likes that? And we may think in terms of unkind thing, or say in terms of unkind thing, or take it even further, do some unkind thing. And if there's some respectable quality, later on you feel badly about that. The qualification of a more elevated person, as Suniti is demonstrating her qualification, is actually two things. And both things come together. The first advice, the first word speaks is the advice to her son. Don't speak unkind words about others. More than that, she says, don't even wish unkind things. Do not wish for anything inauspicious for others. Anyone who inflicts pains upon others suffers himself from that pain, because this is just simply understanding the law of karma. It's pretty basic. But in heat of anger, to be able to remember the laws of nature and the responsibility that one has for one's actions and even one's thoughts, ill thoughts towards others. That's a lot of self-pull. So what is it that allows Suniti to have that self-control is demonstrated by the next thing that she says. And that is, the remedy is, if you've been dealt with in some unkind way, and this is the lesson for us, if you've been dealt with in some unkind way, someone has dealt with you in such a way that proper distinction of time and place and circumstance hasn't been executed with all due consideration, what should you do? Turn your attention to the personality of Godhead. And Suniti's making reference to previous great personalities who happen to have been the relatives of Dhruva Maharaj, his grandfather and his great-grandfather, Swami Dhruva Maharaj and Lord Brahma himself. She's referring to the equally position of both, and indicating that just as they have done, you should do. And by then, see how they have benefited. See the position of Lord Brahma, see the position of Swami Dhruva Maharaj. Turn their attention to the personality of Godhead. And it was no easy task what Lord Brahma did. He had no association, he had no certainty of what to do, where to go, how to, anything. Simply he heard the syllables, tapa, repeated times. To perform austerity penances. And from this austerity and penance, he was was enlightened fully about the personality of Godhead by the personality of Godhead directly. And then further, he was able to engage in very responsible service on Krishna's behalf, creating the whole, engineering the whole of the universal construction. Big service, big utility. Because the Lord was pleased with the diligence with which he executed the instruction. That's all I can go on. I mean, imagine, every time I hear this description being presented, it makes me think how dull-headed we are. We have to hear things 50,000 million times. You chant your rounds, rise early, go to Mangalaki, and so on. But Lord Brahma just heard tapa, and for 100 astral years, he did it. No one could, you know, look
Katrina wasn't there to come around and wake him up in the morning. Mangalaji, 3:30, right? Well, I am Devamanav. But some information is being given here about the character and personality of Swayam Devamanav. This is today's verse. Unflinching faith and devotion, he distributed charity and worshipped and satisfied the Supreme Reality of Godhead. This point of devotion, thinking how to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not difficult to understand how that's possible. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is accepted as a person. I forget the technical term, but there's some term that if you understand a thing in its microcosm, you can understand a thing in its macrocosm. The same way the other way around. If you can understand God, you can understand something about the living entity. It's the idea that God religion and self-realization occur simultaneously. If you can understand, there's a whole presentation in one approach to understanding the absolute truth that encourages contemplate self, and from that point getting some inkling, but not trying to separate. So if we can understand something about a living entity is pleased on this mortal plane, it gives at least some inclination of how God is pleased. In other words, just understanding some simple things about human nature can give us a very important clue how to realize God, which is the void. So just simple things about human nature. If someone, any one of us sitting in this room, had a friendship with a medicine in which that other thing was constantly, incessantly, without any other attitude or mood, but this other person was always thinking what you want and to accommodate that thing that you want. And if there's some instruction, some advice that's given, without fail, that instruction or advice that is taken up. Naturally, that's overwhelming. It doesn't happen. It doesn't in this material world. But if that were to happen, even some approximation of that were to happen, that person would become very dear to you. And it's just, you would be compelled to feel well disposed toward that person. And Prabhupada gives this example, same example, a teacher towards their students or parents towards their children. If amongst the children there are many children in the family, one child is particularly affectionate and particularly responsive to the direction coming from the elders, and even before the parents request, the child is anticipating what the parents want, what my mother and what my father want, then naturally the parents become particularly disposed to that child. It's not partiality, it's just natural. Just natural. Anyway, Aham Bija Pratapita, Krishna describes that he is the seed-giving father of all living entities. And amongst all the living entities, if there are some, or a few, or even one living entity, if a living entity really demonstrates the same kind of attitude of being very eager to hear what it is that Krishna wants, and being very good to execute whatever that is, at whatever difficulty it matter for my own personal inconvenience, it doesn't matter what hardship I have to undergo or what might be considered. That's not austerity. The real austerity, people know it as austerity, is living in this material world in a condition of forgetfulness. That's really austere. Wanting to be happy, having to pretend that we're happy, when in fact we're not. Because this place is designed to be filled with misery, going on as if it's not. and trying to enjoy it. Untouchable. That's austerity. Living in this material world in a condition of forgetfulness of God, that's austerity. But whatever inconvenience that one may have to undergo to carry out what is the desire of someone that one loves very much, that's not austerity, that's love. That's something very wonderful, relishable, enjoyable. Undergoing some difficulty, knowing that the end result of this activity that I'm doing now is going to be oblivious to whatever inconvenience one's senses may have to experience. Just like how people respond to, you know, the classic question when speaking to a high school or a college group, and they want to know, can you tell us something about your typical day? You know, the class that you work. And of course, the thing to say is, well, we all rise at 3:30 in the morning, and everybody in the temple gets together, all one of us. Wow. That's it. Every day? That, to them, is a super austerity. But for us, for devotees who regularly attend Mangala Arati, rising early in the morning, it's wonderful. The days that, for some reason or another, illness or audit or something, don't rise early, it's awful to not rise early. Very difficult that day to not rise early. Anyway, this is described in Bhagavad Gita, what is nighttime for the person in illusion is daytime for the sage, and vice versa. Because they're up late at night performing their sinful activities, while the devotee is resting early and rising early. To perform spiritual activity in the auspicious early morning hours. This is like a whole study of one can make a whole study. The difference between the position of a Christian soul trying to imagine what it's like to be in a direct relationship with the personality of God, to get from our present position to position, there is a whole series of things that you have to do that fall under the category, the description of austerity, sacrifice, inconvenience, trouble, regulation. That's an anomaly to material society. Therefore we call it austerity, penance, sacrifice. But it's from the transcendentalist's point of view, it's just a natural activity. It's impossible to do anything else. It's unwanted to even consider doing something else. I wonder what it would be like to Nibbalati for a week in a row. We don't want to think like that. We don't care to think like that. Instead, we might want to contemplate the other way around. What would it be like to be engaged directly in the Lord's service? But by the grace of this disciplic succession, Srila Prabhupada, and the movement of Srila Mahaprabhu, here we have devotees engaging in the service of Krishna. This is the austerity and sacrifice of this age. The Sankirtan, Yajna. The sacrifice for this age is to be an ecstasy. That's the sacrifice. To come together early in the morning and chant the holy name of God and dance. As we say, figure it out. All we have is tapa. But we have a very, very clear example. And the activities are wonderful. Kirtan, chanting of japa. Due to our contamination only, it may be difficult for us to stay fully awake and alert, chanting with rapt attention, relishing the holy name. But it's actually relative activity, this thing that we call austerity. upon his relishable activity, it's the most relishable activity. Yes, chanting together in the temple or going in them, just like any one of the devotees that attended the Hum program on Saturday evening. It was just me. Whether someone was chanting or whether someone was even for the commons. They were chanting and dancing and hearing about Krishna. Should have had Adam there, that was missing. The ecstasy of giving out prasadam. The ecstasy of watching the person take the prasadam and knowing what's happening transcendentally as they're taking Krishna prasadam. And watching their face light up, wow, this is very good. Well, why don't you come to our... The whole sankirtan is wonderful. That's our austerity, to engage in wonderfully enjoyable activity. And it's from that performance of wonderfully enjoyable activity that we call austerity that entitles us to having the quality like Samiti had. That even when there was cause for great anger, and even becoming angered, to not manifest that anger, but to remain completely self-controlled, speak only kind words of others, not even feeling or wishing unkind things upon others. It's transcendental life. That's what we all want. That is Vaikuntha life. And the beginning place for this Vaikuntha life is the temple. Vaikuntha atmosphere should be within the temple. And that's an individual, each devotee has that responsibility, or you might say burden, bring their consciousness to that point so that they're giving that kind of association and that kind of example in all their dealings, even there may be cause for anger, there may be cause for disturbance, to remain undisturbed and to be wishing only kind things upon others, even they may wish unkind things upon you or speak unkind things upon you, speak harshly, whatever. There's Vaikuntha atmosphere. And no day, along with the regular devotional activities within the temple, no better way to develop that kind of quality within ourselves than by the performance of sankirtan, the sacrifice for the nature. Learn at home and learn in the chase, Prabhupada would say. But this sankirtan allows us, or demands of us, in fact, that kind of qualification. There's to be so enthusiastic in presence of our execution of sankirtan that we're so undeviatingly determined to engage other people in Krishna's service, to give them that much mercy. A lion in the chase. One, to be very, very strong, very forceful, powerful, and at home like a lamb, very, very gentle, very kind in one's dealings, very, very careful to observe all proper Vaishnava etiquettes. And this is the desired position. And then, again, we can be decorated with such nice qualities as Samiti was demonstrating here. So, any comments or questions? Yes? She had a particular nature. She was the wife of a king. She had Kshatriya spirit. I was thinking even to discuss a little bit about that. Someone was asking. Where's Hardini? We were discussing this point the other day that, you know, even in a woman's body, she was of that spirit, Kshatriya spirit. So it's part of her physical makeup to have that response when there's a chance to be chivalrous and respond and kind. There's nothing wrong with that. that she demonstrated her transcendental quality. It's a higher position. But there's no fault particular in the evidence in Niti's response. When one is completely purified, then the happinesses and essences that are born from the impulses of the modes of material nature no affect one at all. There's a discussion in Nectar Devotion between Shiva and Parvati. And that she was explaining, answering the question that Parvati asks, and his answer indicates that in the topmost intellectual position, it's no longer that one tolerates different miseries, and the miseries that one experiences diminish. But transcendentalist no longer experiences them. It's no longer a matter of remaining undisturbed, even though there's a disturbance going on. But one is no longer disturbed. Thank you. I couldn't hear the question. I can't hear. Can you hear what she's saying, Rory? I heard that word. What were her responsibilities? Explained in the coming verses. He didn't find out the answer to that question until he wanted to know the meaning. She just said, he asked her, okay, if I'm to worship the person of Godhead, I will do it. Tell me where to find him. She said, well, I don't know, but I've heard that the sages, they're the forest, and they perform different practices by finding in the forest. So he left for the forest. Won the forest, and he ran into Narada Muni. He asked the same question of Narada Muni. Only Narada taught what to do properly. So Narada functioned as his spiritual master. Kriya Maharaj's spiritual master was Narada. But in part also Niti. And in part even Saruchi. By instruction, although it came in a very harsh way, unpaled way, that's the position of the swan-like devotee, is to take everything even from a filthy place. Take the swan has this capacity of taking milk even from the clean body of water, taking the nectar. Say it again. Well, obviously it's not good because of guilt. In a very short period of time, in fact, within a number of months. Well, she was indicating the general, not the specific. Because obviously it wasn't correct. To have these qualities. It's nice for everyone to have these qualities. That's what the spiritual world is like. That's it. And the way to go is by developing qualities. One is not allowed, it's very nice actually, but no one not possessing those qualities is allowed to enter the spiritual world. That means once you're in the spiritual world, you need only about ruffians and rogues and nasty manners ever being trained. It's for our life in our Krishna conscious temples is for training and purification. One should be tolerant in others lacking of the highest, topmost spiritual quality, and try to develop that quality within yourself. And that should be each of our attitudes. Mental life within the temple is also Vaikuntha life, free from anxiety, assisting each other in the maximum manner to the purest stage of spiritual life. And that means also cooperating very much, encouraging one another in performance of sankirtan. Because it's from this sankirtan that we'll learn how to appreciate the qualities of the devotees, whatever little blemish may be there in comparison to the ocean of faults that's found in the material world. The little blemish that may be found on this individual or that individual character is insignificant. And you forget that fact if you're regularly performing sankirtan. Compare the quality of the devotees to the quality of the non-devotees. It's a relief to be back in the temple after performing sankirtan, isn't it? You completely forget whatever whatever rough comment the cook has made or temple commander has made, or whatever management oversight the temple president has made, or something, or the pujari did something that wasn't just right, and you became disturbed. Overlook those things, because look at the devotion. Compare that devotion and that spiritual quality to people you just had to go out and try to give a book to, or give the holy name to, or give prasadam to, or engage in kusala somehow. So, regular performance of sankirtan is something the Prabhupada always emphasized. Go out and meet the conditioned soul face to face. Then so much more appreciate the association of devotees. And to demonstrate this quality that's need to demonstrate. Whatever may be the problem, taking shelter is not